hell was that?
This Halloween.
You're wasting your time. It's all sealed up.
The only thing worse than being trapped in a house with a ghost.
This house is not a house. We're in the middle of a machine. Powered by the dead.
Is being trapped in a house with 13 ghosts.
Maggie!
What?
We got company.
Where? I can't see.
How close is it?
Close enough to hurt you.
Welcome back into another episode of the Bad Movies Worst Opinions podcast, where we believe that everybody has a favorite bad movie. The only rule of the podcast is that we must watch a movie that is rated below a 6.0 on IMDb. I did not pick this movie. Rob did not pick this movie. You guys picked this movie. So if you check the Instagram, we spun a wheel. It landed on 13 Ghosts. That is the movie that we are doing today. 13 Ghosts is rated a 5.6 on IMDb with almost 100,000 views. And joining us in studio to review this movie today is Greg Dedrick. He is with the Nightmare Junkhead podcast. You love this film.
I will go to bat for this film. I know you said it. We fell upon it. I think fate brought us to this movie.
That's kind of the theme of this movie. Fate brought us here. That is a very central theme of 13 Ghosts. 13 Ghosts was released on October 26th back in 2001, has a runtime of 91 minutes. The budget was $42 million. The box office was $68.5 million. You would call this a slight success, but usually the studios like to double up in these scenarios.
A moderate hit, but very much what it was for as it was at the time. I mean, this was the time you had the remake renaissance really kicking in. So they were trying to capitalize on some of those previous IPs. In fact, you know, with like Dark Castle, it was leaning into William Castle-esque films from back in the 60s. So I'm always kind of curious what they really thought they would get in terms of the return with the money and the investment on that.
Where do you think $42 million spent? Because on casting, there's maybe 10 people in this movie. They did not spend it on people in this movie. I want to know what the budget is for Matthew Lillard and the cast versus the special effects and the incredible house mousetrap contraption that they created.
That's just it. I think it's Sean Hargreaves was the production designer of this film. I think it all went into that house. That house is basically a character in this film. And I'm very thankful that we got mostly practical and not a lot of ones and zeros. I think you really see a lot of the budget up on the screen.
So let me give you the box office for October 26th of 2001. K-Pax debuted at number one at $17.2 million. Have you seen K-Pax?
Right now, I'm really needing to bite into an unpeeled banana and talk about Protus on your planet. Yes.
13 Ghosts debuted at number two at $15.1 million. From Hell was number three that week with $6 million. Riding in Cars with Boys was number four that week. I had not seen any of these movies until we get to number five. Training Day was in the box office the same time as 13 Ghosts. That was his third week in theaters. $5.1 million for Training Day. Certainly very different than the first four films that I named.
King Kong ain't got shit on the 13 Ghosts in this case.
Sometimes I just go on YouTube and I just want to watch a couple of scenes from Training Day just because it is impossible for you to act at a higher level than Denzel. Whether it's in the diner where he's like, "You want to read the paper? Because it's bullshit." It entertains me. That scene, the scene you just referenced, the scene where he beats the crackhead up in the alley. There's so many iconic scenes from that movie.
We were talking off mic about some of the shows we enjoy, and Training Day is a perfect example of a rewatchable, where no matter what scene you come into this film, you're like, oh, I kind of need to watch this now. I will say, I think Matthew Lillard in 13 Ghosts was trying to channel his inner Denzel, because he is operating at an 11 in this film.
Do you think this is peak Matthew Lillard before we really get deep into this movie? Because Matthew Lillard, from a stretch of like 99 to maybe 02, he's on fire. She's All That, 13 Ghosts, Scooby-Doo, Matthew Scream. Matthew Lillard is A-level actor in Hollywood. Is this peak Matthew Lillard?
I don't think it peaks more than him doing that dance in She's All That.
No, you're right.
Oh, my Lord. And he is one of those cats that apparently, by all from what I've heard, is just a genuine good dude, loves his fans, and has been making the convention rounds here lately, but also is still contributing and is still working to this day.
You can always clean up on the Comic-Con circuit. If you're somebody like Matthew Lillard, who is in a lot of movies and you're really friendly with people, you can make a living just off going around the country meeting people and signing autographs.
I'm not unconvinced that agents at this point, when they're getting their actors into genre films, are like, hey, many years down the line now, you'll have your like retirement plan based on the people, you know, you're, the lives you're touching at this point with these films.
Let me give you the cast of 13 Ghosts. Oh. Tony Shalhoub, I don't know if that's how you pronounce his last name. He is Arthur. Imbeth Davids, that is Kalina. Matthew Lillard is Dennis Rafkin. Shannon Elizabeth, she is Nadia in this home. She is Kathy. Alec Roberts is Bobby, that's the little boy. J.R. Bourne is Ben Moss. Is that the insurance guy, Ben? Mm-hmm. Okay, all right, just making sure. J.R. Bourne. Rod Digga is Maggie Bess. And F. Murray Abram, he is Cyrus. He is the antagonist of the film. He's not in the movie for a long period of time, but every time he's on there, he plays a very convincing villain.
F. Murray Abraham is one of those character actors, because I just watched Amadeus for the first time this year, and he plays Salieri. And his performance, I had heard about it, had a reputation, and watching that, it makes me appreciate all the stuff retroactively that he's been in since. Because not only like with 13 Ghosts, I highly recommend, if you haven't seen it, a little film called Surviving the Game. It's got F. Murray Abraham, Gary Busey, Rutger Hauer, Charles Dutton. It's basically Man is the Most Dangerous Game, and they're all hunting Ice-T.
What a cast.
It's incredible. It's incredible.
What a cast is in this movie. I got to check this
out. Oh, my Lord. It is.
This movie sounds like it's on Tubi. That's what it sounds like.
I guarantee
like.
You'll find it on Tubi.
Yeah, this sounds like a Tubi.
It's by the great Ernest Dickerson, who is one of those filmmakers that I don't think gets enough love. But yeah, F. Murray Abraham, he is just one of those character actors that when he shows up, he makes it better. So when he popped up in this, I was just so excited. Going back to him.
Let me ask you this before we get into the plot of the movie. What is the worst movie you've seen in the movie theater? What is your least favorite candy?
Oh, so I am someone that I love movies. I go in with low expectations every time, so I'm very rarely disappointed. But the one time I actually walked out of a movie, this was a few years ago, but this is embarrassing. It was for Austin Powers Goldmember. There was something about it that I don't know if it was the peeling of the skin and the eating of it, but there was just something that just totally turned me off, and it's one of the few times I've ever walked out of the theater. It just very rarely happens, so I'd have to say Austin Powers Goldmember for
okay,
that.
All right, a unique movie choice here. That's your walk out of the theater. What's your least favorite candy?
Ooh, that's a tough one, because I'm not really a sweets eater, but the stuff that really kind of turns my stomach in a real not in a good way is actually anything that is sour based. So as much as I'd love to like Sour Patch Kids and stuff, I want to like them, but my body won't let me like them.
That might be my favorite candy. Look at this. My favorite candy, your least favorite candy are coming together.
I'm gonna live vicariously through you. So if you could just start eating a few and just go good and soury, Greg. I really wish you could have one of these.
I love sour candies. I love Sour Patch Kids. I love those Sour Patch Straws. I love sour Skittles. I don't really like hot tamales. Also, something like butterscotch. Why are you handing me a butterscotch candy? What are you doing here? Very disrespectful. Almond Joy. Who loves an Almond Joy?
Weathers, anything along those lines. And
I love Weathers. All right, now. Watch
okay. Oh, hey, hold on. Well, I'm closer now to 50 than anything, so I think I'm like predisposed to start really delving into butterscotch candies. I've actually gone from really digging the Police to actually really digging Sting's like solo work. So I think there's a lot of stuff that you transition to becoming middle-aged and old. It's rough.
One thing that I've learned about over the course of the month and doing this and only watching horror movies is 2000 horror movies are its own genre of movies. They are unlike modern day horror movies. They are unlike 90s horror movies, where they were more slasher based, yep. I would say, in the 80s and the 90s. There is a stretch of about 5 years. We watched House of Wax earlier. We watched 13 Ghosts. Yep. Like, they are their own genre of movies for a span.
I think primarily it's because in the 90s, you had Wes Craven kind of rejuvenate the slasher series with Scream, and you had everyone trying to recreate that. And then in the 2000s, that kind of went out of fashion, and they were trying to find that next wave of horror. And as it turns out, primarily in the 2000s, this is where we got the remakes. We got a lot of torture porn. We got a lot of the J horror with the Japanese horror that came through. And so that was kind of like, I always like to say, the onion of the belt at the time. And everyone was trying to replicate that and not necessarily finding the next original voice that was out there.
So our movie 13 Ghosts begins in a junkyard, and it looks like somebody is about to commit a breaking and entering. Matthew Lillard is trying to warn the big boss man about something, but he's not trying to hear it. There's some other folks that we will learn about later in the movie that are trying to warn Cyrus, but he's not listening to them either. There's a 13 Ghosts. Release the bait. There's a semi-truck spraying blood. Some chants are also playing over the Bluetooth speaker. Well, the ghosts have arrived, and they don't seem too happy, and they are putting up some incredible numbers. I will tell you that as I watched this first scene of the movie, I knew at this point, I don't know if 13 Ghosts are for me. I pushed through this for the podcast because that is the commitment that I've made to you that choose to download and subscribe this podcast. I knew in the first 5 minutes, yeah, this movie might not be for me.
I'm shocked because within the first 5 minutes, so I didn't see this one in 2001. I was pretty late to the game on it. I actually caught it for the first time at a Terror Tuesday at the old Alamo Draft House. And the first 5 minutes for me, you have a pickup truck spraying blood all over. Basically, it looked like a cast-off set from one of the old Nightmare on Elm Street movies in the junkyard. I was all for it because then you get some incredible practical effects. You have some great kills. It's just so bombastic, and it's just it tells you the kind of movie it's going to be. So I think in this case, you're like, I don't know if I'm ready for this.
No, you're right. It did tell me what kind of movie it was going to be. It stayed very consistent. I have noticed in these early 2000 films, there is a certain way that they shoot and cut and edit them that I just don't like. Like, you could just tell early on with the shots of the ghosts and the going back and forth and how hectic it was. I didn't love this movie. I understand how this movie is polarizing. I also understood as the movie went on, I get how it's a cult classic. I think a lot of the cult classic is just our fascination with ghosts. Mm-hmm. I also think, man, Matthew Lillard is a legitimate movie star. And every time he is on the screen, he is incredible and carries the movie. Now we'll get to more of the cast as they get introduced, and there's a good balance. Like, I think there's a little bit of comedy, a little bit of fun. There's a little bit of horror here, a little bit over the top. But Matthew Lillard carries this movie so many times.
There is nothing wasted with his movement. Just everything. He uses every single bit of his body. One of the things I love about him. But one of the things I legit love in this intro scene is we do get the introduction of F. Murray Abraham's Cyrus character, and he is introduced with this, it stunned me. It was this cape cane combo that you have to be confident to rock, because he is rocking that. And that is very much saying, I am someone that is probably not to be trusted.
Like, they had a line in the movie where the female character, Kalina, I believe it is her name, she says, you're playing God. And he said, playing is for children.
Who are you to play God?
Playing's for children.
You'll never pull it off. Not without the right spells. That and the 13th ghost.
13th ghost?
Get them out of my sight.
And I was like, the way you delivered that line, you had me believing like, oh, maybe you can't control these ghosts. You cannot control this ghost. So we met Cyrus's nephew, and he has a hectic home life. A man pops up on the door to let the family know that they are now rich. They're given a key to their new house. And let me tell you, their house is absolutely beautiful. I will call my first time out of the podcast. If you hand me a key to a house and that's the way the key looks, I got a lot of questions, man. That's not the way a key is supposed to look. It had things inscribed on it. It looked like the Lion Witch in the Wardrobe. Keep this house away from me.
You have to have, I think, a PhD of some sort to operate the key to fully, like, actualize that house. It looks like something that like Tom Cruise would have to find for the new Mission Impossible movies. It looks like that kind of weight with the key.
Then when he put the key into the lock, the key, like, the house took over unlocking the door. Hey, man, what's going on here? He didn't ask nearly enough questions for me in the first 10 minutes of this movie.
No, and the problem is, not only is your uncle, and what I loved is we get some newspaper exposition. Mm-hmm. He's called a noted adventurer. If you notice that in the newspaper, and that made me laugh because for me that is so coded, because I see noted adventurer. What I hear is professional pervert, like someone that has a house like this, that much Latin written on that kind of key. They're looking for something that I don't think most people are prepared for.
I also, when you see that house for the first time, if you were in the financial situation that he's in, you're willing to move hours away. Just sell the house. You now own the house. You can do whatever you want to the house.
no, we don't want to live here. If you're telling me that money is no longer an issue, we're going to live in downtown Manhattan. We're going to live in the nice high rise that overlooks Central Park, and we're going to have one of the most incredible homes in New York City. I'm going to move out here to the country where there's nobody around us in this weird ass looking house. Again, he didn't ask enough questions for me.
Anytime you have no neighbors for miles, that's a warning sign.
Something's about to go wrong.
Something's up. Something's
about to go wrong. So their new home is a couple hours away in a town called Willow Grove. Matthew Lillard is acting as an electrician checking out the house, which looks very similar to those ghost canisters from early in the movie. He is downstairs in the basement looking for ghosts and seems to be having ghost migraines. Way too many ghost migraines for me in this movie. It was every time Matthew Lillard was there, he just would start spazzing out for some reason and grabbing his head and falling to the ground. He had too many ghost migraines for me.
And every time you get the ghost migraine, that's when you get the flashing and the editing and all that stuff that is very 2000s at that time.
So Matthew Lillard has seen enough and he hightails it out of the basement after another ghost run in. He runs to tell the new owner of the house about what he knows, but of course no one believes him. He's talking about ghosts. Matthew Lillard, for the first 45 an hour minutes of the movie, kept trying to tell, hey, something's wrong with this house. No, you don't know what you're talking about. This man has been sweating and passing out and telling you, get your family, get your kids, we need to get out of here. And they just don't believe him for the first. Hold on, you're telling me you believe this. There's two people you've never met before if you're Arthur. There's the man in the suit, and there is the man who is sweating, passing out. Why are you going to believe the man who was way calm about this situation and not this other person?
I've learned many things watching a number of horror films, but typically if a long and angular pasty person is telling you to steer clear of something, you should probably listen to them.
Yeah, listen, I will say this now. This is something in horror movies. Black people usually try to listen. She didn't have to tell Maggie too many times. Maggie found out for herself. Maggie was the only person who listened to Matthew Lillard the whole movie. Nobody else was listening to Matthew Lillard. She was told about ghosts and followed Matthew Lillard. Matthew told her to be quiet. She didn't say nothing. Stop moving. Then at the end, when everybody is embracing each other, the black person is the only one like, bro, get me out of here. I'm not doing this anymore.
And I am telling you, there is something about, and another lesson that you learn in horror films is if you see Latin, never read it aloud. You know something bad is going to happen, but this is just a house for summoning. As they mentioned, like, and I don't know what they're going to be summoning. It could be something sinister, saccharine, sweet. We don't know, but something sinister is happening with a house like that. I don't know if I would actually even like visit that kind of a house just for fun. Like, that is just seriously freaky.
The kids are looking around against their father's order, and Matthew Lillard continues to have ghost seizures. The suit is walking around. He can see the ghost, and he's talking to the ghost. I think he's in on it. This lawyer character individual finds a briefcase full of cash. Grabbing the briefcase starts some sort of mouse trap ghost contraption that unlocks the ghost, and now the movie is off and running. Well, he's dead.
And such a way. This is one of my favorite kills of the movie.
Can I tell you the truth?
Yeah.
Let me tell you the truth.
Yeah.
The first time I watched this movie, at this point, I turned the movie off, and I questioned whether or not I was going to finish the movie. I really did. But I was like, you know what? I checked the YouTube TV. I got an hour left. I can do it. At this moment, when I see that man split in half, I was like, you know what? Maybe 13 Ghosts isn't for me. That's the second time I've thought that in the early part of the movie. I didn't mean to cut off your story.
No.
I just had to tell you, this was the first time in the movie I was ready to turn it off.
So that being said, that level of a gag, that is, because it's so detailed, it's so goopy, it looks like something you would see at like a science station possibly, like the vivisected people. Is that too much on the gore side
no,
for you?
No, that part wasn't it. It was just the whole thing. It's him walking through. He's talking to the ghost. It's all these cut scenes.
And talking such smack to the ghost as well.
I couldn't. Matthew Lillard's having these ghost seizures. I would have been fine with not knowing how the movie is. I do have this question. I wrote this. This is my next question. Who starts the bathtub to splash water in their face? The sink? Sure. We've all done that before. You have never gone over to the bathtub, run the bathtub, and started. What is Shannon Elizabeth doing?
And I am someone that every Friday I have a giant bathtub and I take a soak in it. It is very therapeutic. It is part of my routine. I have never, ever actually just turned on my bathtub to splash. It doesn't happen. But you know what? I think it's the allure of having, in this case, I believe it is the angry princess in said bathtub that brought her over, like maybe to do something she normally wouldn't do. Can we talk a little bit about some of the ghosts in here?
Yeah, of course.
Oh, my God. Because the movie is titled 13 Ghosts.
Which one's your favorite?
Ooh. My favorite, I think, is the jackal.
Yeah, with the little cage on its head.
And I only mention that because at one of the most recent Crypticons that happened here, it's a horror convention here in Kansas City, there was an entire family all dressed up as the 13 ghosts. And their little kid, who was probably all of 8 or 9, was the jackal.
Oh,
and
wow.
And had this just little cage on his face, and it was the most adorable thing I've seen. But at the same time, though, knowing that this kind of film, this, I guarantee this little 8-year-old kid and their entire family have probably watched 13 Ghosts over and over again. So there's just something that what I love with horror is it is very generational. It's stuff that you pass down. And even something like this now that is 23 years old, been whole families that have, you know, been growing up with this. So I know, you know what, I'm taking my answer back. I was a little biased based on the little kid playing as the jackal. It's the great child and the dire mother.
That was my least favorite one.
Is there any time you can add a man baby into a scenario? Oh my Lord, there's just something to it. And it's also just the fact that every ghost is distinct. This was like made for DVD extras, and I know there is a phenomenal DVD extra that actually goes in depth and detail into every ghost, gives their backstory to the point where you could probably put together like a very interesting Netflix series of all the individual ghosts and give them all like an episode. What was their backstory? How do they become a ghost? Why are they nefarious and all that stuff? Yeah, I loved every ghost that was out there.
One small complaint, I understand, because the movie is titled 13 Ghosts, that you tried to get all of them in. I don't feel like they were all equal, though. Like, we got way more of, I can't remember which kind it was, but the black gentleman with the nails in his head.
Hammer, I believe. Hammer. The hammer.
He was in the movie a lot. Jackal was in the movie a lot. The man baby, you saw it a couple of times, but it didn't really do something. Mm-mm. There was the pilgrim. Mm-hmm. We never really saw the pilgrim in this movie. So, like, out of the 13 ghosts, we maybe got 7 of them.
And listen, I love brevity. So you give me a 90-minute movie or under, I'm going to love it. But this is one of those scenarios where I could have used probably more kills or more time with the ghost to give us equal time. Because the firstborn son, the kid with the arrow out of his head, I could have sworn like maybe he was like a fan of Steve Martin's like stand-up comedy back in the day when he had an arrow in the head. I want to explore that kind of a background with all of these people. We've got the torso, like little bits and pieces of a person. We've got the bound woman, the withered lover, the torn prince, the guy with the baseball bat, the angry princess, the pilgrims, the great child and die. I mean, I want more. My co-host, Genius McGee on Nightmare Junkhead, his biggest complaint with the horror is he just wants more. You know, give me more. And this is one of those things, I kind of wanted more with it.
See these? They represent the Black Zodiac. They represent the ghost that Cyrus needed to catch. The firstborn son. The torso. The bound woman. The withered lover. The torn prince. The angry princess. The pilgrims. The great child and the dire mother. The hammer. And here, the sign of Hell's winter. The jackal. And the juggernaut. According to Basilius, the machine required the energy of these specific spirits in order to bring it to life. Once it engages, the spirits are released one by one. The house then draws them to its center. Each one adds its energy to the machine, powering it up.
Is there a sequel to this movie? I imagine there is a sequel to
there
this.
There isn't.
There's no sequel. This was the one and done?
Give me the
I guess because it didn't really smash in the box office. If it, they probably would have gave you another one, but this feels like a movie that if you had another maybe hour and a half sequel where you get a little bit more backstory, maybe a prequel, what leads Cyrus to become this ghost hunter, ghost secure? He was collecting ghosts like they were autographed jerseys.
Got it.
Like they were trading cards.
And just, though, I think it's his cavalier attitude. There's a thing about, like, privilege with someone like that and just assuming they can do whatever they want because they have money, they have that kind of power. So he definitely gets to lean in kind of the despicable side of a guy. So when at the beginning, spoiler alert, when you see him, we think he's dead, which I'm still not unconvinced what he is through this film. If he is dead, undead, if he's just doing some sort of like weird little practical effect thing on his neck.
I think he's alive for this reason. Whenever Arthur, so Arthur sees him with his glasses.
Yes.
And
yes.
Then Arthur takes his glasses off and can still see him. In my opinion, he is still alive and he has tricked everybody. That's what I think. But I mean, it's certainly a good theory. And I wouldn't be surprised if that's the illusion that the trick of the movie it wants to play on you, if you're wondering whether or not he really is alive. But in that moment, I thought the movie was trying to communicate that he is alive. So the little boy is lost. Little boy is walking around the house. He's wheeling around. His little razor scooter. He hears a ghost voice telling him to go downstairs, and he thinks that it's Maggie. He hears a bunch of voices going off. One is a very familiar voice. We later find out why that is. Curiosity always wins out. The front door is now locked. They are trapped inside. A very underrated part of this movie is some of Rod Digga's lines. So they all are in the like front little foyer thing, and then they are about to walk off. And she asks if the lawyer split, and they cut away from it real quick. Like they didn't really let the line breathe long enough. She said, did the lawyer split? And I was like, that's pretty good. She had a couple of those quick witty one-liners. The movie kind of needed her humor a little bit. It didn't really let it really like grow out a lot, but I thought her quick little witty one-liners, or when she kind of DJs the ghost away, it had some funny lines.
Oh God. Well, that, you gotta have levity with stuff like this. Cause if it is just nothing but just constant gore and blood, you get overwhelmed with the nastiness, you know? And that's why horror and humor, I've always felt, serve the same purpose, just in terms of like this catharsis. And so when you can actually overlap the horror and the humor and get that, it's just this perfect melding of some of my favorite things. So you gotta have the quips and the stuff to make you giggle.
This family is still not listening to Matthew Lillard, even though he's the only one who seems to know what's going on. The family still hasn't found the kid, but the ghosts sure have. As the kid is trying to run away, he runs into a glass door, which is to be expected in a place like this. Why are they splitting up? They know something is off in this house. Matthew Lillard says to Arthur, I don't think we should be doing that. Then Arthur, which is a theme of the first half of the movie, he just has other ideas. Whether it's Kalina who tries to come help him, whether it's Matthew Lillard, you don't know anything about ghosts. These people seemingly know everything about ghosts, and you continue to go against their orders.
You can't basically, when you're dealing with someone in the spirit reclamation business, and that killed me, because when they first showed up at the beginning at the junkyard, I'm like, wow, we have like ghost activists here. Like we have people that are advocating for the undead, which I always thought was kind of cool. And the fact that then they add that specific title, she had a look, and I don't know if it was necessarily, it was the vest combo, if it was the flares.
She's like ghost Laura Croft.
Thank you.
That's what she looked like.
Thank you. I got the Laura Croft vibes like nobody's business. So I'm glad I am not alone in that.
No, you were not alone. That's what I wrote her down later in the movie. Oh, that's ghost Laura Croft. So Maggie finally believes in the ghost after being handed the magic ghost sunglasses. Dad and daughter find the kid's ghost glasses and the tape recorder. The jackal is out. He is the Charles Manson of ghosts. Nadia is a believer now after seeing the ghost for herself and is attacked by one of the ghosts. They are saved by the woman that we met earlier in the movie, ghost Laura Croft. She also was in the ghost business and she's there to save their asses. I will say this about the movie, and we're going to get to it here in a bit. I thought the movie had a couple of really good plot twists. Like, you believe that this woman is good. You believe that she is there to help. And very quickly, you're like, wait, hold on. You two-timey witch. I can't believe you would do this to us. The movie did a good job of kind of keeping you off your toes, and what you thought was true, it was never true in this movie.
I guess you should always be wary of people that do give you the exposition, that actually do break things down for you, that will introduce, oh, this is the book. Well, what book? Well, read the book. And you have to... I've always found that the people that are charged with that are sometimes untrustworthy because maybe it's just in their blood. I'm not quite sure on that side. But we haven't really given Shannon Elizabeth her due. You mentioned Nadia because I think... Depending on your age range, yes.
That's who she is to me.
I mean, and that was only, what's that?
I can't think of her in anything else. I don't want to think of her in anything else. That's Nadia from American Pie.
And that was that 99, I think, when that came out. So that's only 2 years removed from that. And listen, I think a lot of us had formative moments with Shannon Elizabeth and were able to grow and evolve with her. But she has, like, good energy in this movie. Like, there is, she kind of has that attitude of, well, things are going to start turning around and our lives are just going to be so much better. And I believe it with her. I have always thought she's kind of an underrated actor that just kind of got pigeonholed into one specific area.
Yeah, I mean, that her role in that movie is just so iconic that I think it's hard for you to ever see her as anything else. Yeah. And that's also your introduction. Like, I can't think of a movie, and maybe she probably was in things.
God help us, Jack Frost.
Yeah, I've never seen Jack Frost, though. No, I think I'm actually planning on watching that. Yeah, I'm planning on watching that for Christmas because I love Vince Vaughn. So I'm planning on watching Jack Frost. But no, it just she's Nadia from American Pie. Plot twist. The fourth ghost is Arthur's wife. His wife's spirit is in this house. We get more backstory about the ghosts, who they are, and why they are here. The woman has a plan. Arthur has to kill himself to save his family. Matthew Lillard disagrees. There has to be a better plan than this. Arthur, of course, he has a plan. Everybody has a plan. We are headed back downstairs to save the kiddos. Wait, you were telling me. This one I should have known. My antenna should have been up here. Wait, you came here to save us, and your plan is I need to die? We need to get some other help. We need to get some reinforcements here. We got to go to the bullpen. We got to bring in somebody else.
Second opinion. Can we talk? That killed me. And the fact that the assumption and just that, yes, you're going to do this because I handpicked you because I knew of your connection with your wife, with your kids. You are such easy pickings for this. The whole, the actual device that we have here, specifically, they say it's designed by the devil and powered by the dead. And there's something about that. I just watched Christine not too long ago, the old John Carpenter film about the possessed car. And it's got the great tagline. It is body by Plymouth, soul by Satan. So I got that kind of a feel with this, just designed by the devil, powered by the dead. That's pretty badass. I'm not going to lie.
I would have never guessed in the first 5 minutes of the movie that Matthew Lillard would have been the voice of reason in this movie. Because Arthur was going to kill himself if it wasn't for Matthew Lillard. Matthew Lillard was like, wait, hold on. That's nonsense here. The only way that your family can live is if you die? Wait, that doesn't sound like a solution at all.
And when Matthew Lillard, that kind of Matthew Lillard is your voice of reason, you know what kind of movie you're in. Which, actually, I appreciate, I think, that much more.
So another plot twist. Cyrus is alive. Kalina and Cyrus are lovers. The ghosts have finally had enough of our friend Matthew Lillard, and he gets suplexed into his death.
There's only room for one of us back there. What are you doing? Don't worry about it. I've been looking for a reason to like myself for a long time.
Don't do this!
Hey, bro! You ain't nothing but a bitch! No!
Cyrus wants to put his family in real danger now. Arthur gets a final moment with his life. The machine needs one more ghost. Who will it be? Cyrus tells Arthur why he did this entire thing, and Cyrus gets crowd surfed into the ghost realm. Maggie DJs the ghost away, and in the process, she blows up the house. The entire family gets to say goodbye to their mom. Maggie is going back to the NYC, and that concludes 13 Ghosts. How do you feel about the final 5 to 7 minutes, the ending of the movie?
I loved it. I loved it because we get basically Salieri getting sliced up into a variety of pieces. As you so eloquently mentioned, he basically does get crowd surfed by the 12 ghosts in this case. And yes, Ra Digga on the ones and zeros, that kills me every single time.
It's hilarious.
Because it does sound like they're just remixing the Latin. And maybe you get like some back-asswards demons when you do something like that. Because you know you're supposed to, like, occasionally run stuff backwards to see if we've got, like, subliminal messages in it. So there are a number of ways that could have gone. I kind of like where it did. And it's so funny because when I came in, I like I said, I really like this film. I think it's fun. I like the performances. I think the over-the-topness is great. It includes, at the very beginning, in the junkyard scene, you've got a backbend gag where that guy gets basically bent backwards into the trunk of a car. And it's one of my favorite old-school gags. There's in the remake of The Blob from 1988, they do that. In Jason Lives, Friday the 13th, Part 6, there's a gag like that. So to me, when you can fold that into the narrative, you've already got someone like me into the movie. And then when Matthew Lillard gets his back broken the way it did, it's so mean and nasty, but I can't help but go, good on you, 13 Ghosts.
I just wasn't expecting for a movie that starts with a semi-truck spraying blood. I would never guess that at the end you would get like a heartfelt family moment. All in the span of 75 minutes, we get... I wasn't expecting a warm, heartfelt ending to the movie. That's just not what I was expecting from 13 Ghosts. It caught me off guard.
That's why we love horror. You never know where the journey is going to take you and where you're going to end up.
So let me get you the reviews for 13 Ghosts. On Rotten Tomatoes, it has an approval rating of 19% with a 3.7 out of 10 with 96 reviews. The website's critical consensus reads, the production design is first rate, but 13 Ghosts is distinctly lacking in scares. That is a fair criticism of this movie. This movie is not scary at all. I understand why it is a horror movie. It is not a scary movie at all.
It's designed to, I think, thrill you. It's designed to make you go, It's designed possibly to infuriate you, but I don't think it's really designed to scare you.
So Ed Gonzalez of Slant Magazine, he gave this movie 2 out of 4 stars and said that the movie had lack of scares and a predictable plot twist. Maybe I'm silly. The plot twist caught me off guard. Cyrus being alive at the end and him being in a relationship with the woman caught me off guard at the very end. I had absolutely no clue.
I think my problem was I was anticipating him coming back because he's such a big name that I'm like, you can't kill Salieri off at the beginning of your film. Yeah, I was waiting and anticipating. So when he finally came out, good, bring me all of that.
I would love to know how much he got paid to basically be on set for 2 days. He couldn't have been there for very long. He's not in this movie long enough to have spent that much time on set. You'll be shocked to know this, but Roger Ebert, not a huge fan of this movie. Back in 2005, he included it on his list of his most hated films. So Roger Ebert, not a huge fan of 13 Ghosts.
It's so funny. At Friday Night Frights at Screenland, we do a pre-show for every movie. And if the movie's old enough that Ebert and Siskel did a review, I'll usually include it. And it's so funny when they pop up, our crowd at this point, I'm not saying they start booing them automatically, but you can hear this like when they pop up because they did not like horror for the most part. They looked down upon it. They looked down on the people that made it. When Silent Night, Deadly Night came out, they actually called out the producer and gave his contact information on air.
Oh, wow.
Like that's how much they did not like horror. So hearing that. Big surprise.
It's very in line. I was really like going to show you just how our tastes have changed and how they've been shaped has been very different. You remember, man, back in the 90s, if Siskel and Ebert had the ability to make or break your movie,
yes,
if they gave your movie 2 thumbs up, that was the biggest recommendation, you know, that people would go see a movie based off their recommendation. Or if they told you to stay away from a film, you might not go see a movie. Like those two people had incredible power in the 90s.
They were the Reddit of their time, the Rotten Tomatoes
of
their
time. That's a great way of describing them.
Well, and it's because we didn't really have the internet at that time. So those kind of voice pieces, I mean, they meant something, especially because they had such power and influence. So I don't know. And I don't even know if like there was payola going on with any of those things.
Probably so, yeah.
Because occasionally they would go back to some of the reviews and go, oh, you know what? I was probably a little harder on it that first time. I can appreciate it now. But I don't know. It's interesting because even like I'm old enough that we had like horror hosts here in the area. And they were also another avenue and gateway into movies that you weren't aware of. And maybe I should take a chance on this. So you would just basically put together the stuff you saw on TV. There were books. Books back in the day that you would accumulate that. So I don't know. I'm old enough that I came from pre-internet days, but now I can appreciate what we have as well, just with the amount of information out there. But I think there's just so much that can easily lead you astray based on someone's opinion, and there's so many opinions out there right now. So always see a movie, make your own opinion, you know, force your way through it if you have to, because now you can check this one off the list of movies you've seen.
I've checked it off the list. Give me what you think 13 Ghosts gets right.
Fun. More than anything, especially going back to the original, William Castle was all about gimmicks with his movies. So he literally had the little goggles that you would put on while watching the film. And with this movie, you have, and I just watched John Carpenter's They Live not too long ago, which is all about putting on glasses and seeing things as they really are. And for me, this movie, it's fun. It's got great gags. It leans into the practical effects. But because of that, I wanted more of all that I didn't get. So for me, it's all about the practical, the ghost, and the gags.
What do you think the movie got wrong?
Not giving us enough of the gore and the gags and the ghosts.
13 Ghosts is rated a 5.6 on IMDb. Now rewatching this movie, is that too little, too much, or just right?
For me, it's just right. It's right down the middle. And I think this is one of those movies that if you're a horror fan, you'll probably appreciate more. If you're casual, it will definitely make you, it's going to have you go through your experience in a lot of ways. I think for some people, the opening might be the ultimate, like, oh my God, this is perfect, or let's do something else possibly.
5.6 is too high for me in this movie. I'm not going to put this movie in the 4 range. I think that's being a little bit too harsh and critical of this movie. I would probably re-rank this in the 5.1, 5.2
that's
phase.
Fair.
I think it's a little bit too high. I cannot put this in the 6. 5.2 is where I'll land on this movie. I did like Matthew Lillard. I liked Rod Digga. I actually liked the cast of this movie. I really did. I thought Cyrus was a good antagonist. I thought having the ghost Laura Croft character, I liked her character a lot. I liked the family. I did like the cast of this movie. There's not much else about this movie that I came away. This is not a movie that I will rewatch. This is not a movie that I enjoyed. This is my least favorite horror movie that we have watched this month.
Oh.
And I liked House of Wax more than I liked this.
I like House of Wax a lot too, so.
I liked House of Wax more. All right, tell people about your podcast, man. When do you guys come out? When can they listen to it?
Every Friday. Just search for Nightmare Junkhead, basically, where pick up your podcast. And we just focus on a lot of old horror, new horror. It's basically just us waxing philosophical about stuff we love every week. We host a thing called Friday Night Frights every Friday at Screenland Armor. We're just big proponents of horror, love genre, love getting people in it, love talking about it, bottom line.
Man, we got to do this again next year, man. Happy to have you come on the podcast today. This was the perfect ending to October as we transition back to our normal kind of movies. And we will watch Head of State. That will be the first movie of November. We got to watch an election movie for election Tuesday. So Head of State with Chris Rock is going to be our next movie. Next week, I will actually give you guys our full calendar for the month of November. We also got Christmas right around the corner, so we will be watching Christmas movies in December. This was another episode of the Bad Movies Worst Opinions podcast, where we believe that everybody has a favorite bad movie. The only rule of the podcast, we must watch a movie rated below a 6.0 on IMDb. We'll catch you next week for Election Tuesday.